Listen.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Oh, yeah, we are. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, it is the NFL draft. It is Christmas in April. I am Pod Vader. I am joined by a multitude of super fans this morning. We're going to get through the entire first round of the draft, some of our thoughts. We got a lot to say, and I got a lot of super fans to talk about it with. But we got so much on the plate, I don't even know where to start. So I'm just going to introduce all the super fans that we have on the show today. First off, we have our Thursday regular, Greg Steeler superfan. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Jay. I had to go to church this morning for my daughter, and I just got done praying for Artie Burns.
Next up is another Thursday regular. That's Neil, our Washington superfan over in Scotland.
Good morning, Jay. Good afternoon, Jay. I don't know what time it is. I've been up for 36 hours. I haven't been to bed, and our first round pick has not helped my mood at all.
Oh, boy. This is going to be a good show, and it's always a good show and a pleasure. It's been a long time since I had a chance to speak with the king of the superfans. That is Rex, our Raven superfan. Good morning, Rex.
Pod, I told you not to call me that, and it's glad to be here. I just got done pricking my finger from shoving pins in my Chris Berman voodoo doll.
Oh, boy. You know I love a good ESPN rant. Coming up next is another across the pond super fan. He represents the Buccaneers. He is Dan. Hello, Dan.
Hey, how you doing? I am so excited for this. Or am I? I don't know.
Coming from the middle of the country, that being the United States of America, it's Green Bay Brian. Hello, Brian.
Hey, how's it going, Pod? Happy to be on.
And finally, one of our newest super fans, and he'll be talking pretty soon. It is our Titan super fan, Jason. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, everyone. And I would just like to say that the state of Tennessee has now made John Robinson the new Davy Crockett.
We'll find out what all of these guys are inferring to a little bit later. You can email this show, nextfanup@gmail.com. Hopefully you have some thoughts and some reactions. We're going to have another show coming up on Sunday, which will recap the entire NFL draft with more super fan reaction. We'll also have a show next Thursday. I've already got a guest in mind that I want to talk to because of some of the things that occurred last night. He'll be the perfect guy. He's a football fan and he's a social media expert. So that might give you a little hint as to what we'll be talking about next Thursday. But we're going to talk about that right now with our super fans. But I really want to try and go in order.
With the first pick in the NFL draft,
there was really no surprise right off the top. We had Jared Goff go number one to the LA Rams of St. Louis. We had Carson Wentz go to the Philadelphia Eagles. I want to start talking about this first pick, Jared Goff. Really not much to say about the quarterbacks going. We sort of knew that that's where they were going to go. We've talked about it ad nauseum. My issue with what happened last night, I get that we have to compare these young guys to former players in the NFL, but Jared Goff is not Joe Montana. And they kept comparing him to Joe Montana. I don't understand why. I spent a little bit more time on ESPN than I did on the NFL network. But Rex, you have some thoughts here as well about the coverage of the draft.
Look, if everyone will indulge me, allow me to vent my frustration over ESPN's coverage. I've been watching the NFL draft for over 20 years now, and I always tune into ESPN. I'm a Baltimore guy. Mel Kiper is a Baltimore guy. Mel Kiper is a guy that grew an industry out of something he loved. It hadn't been done before, and he makes a living doing it. That's admirable. So I add it more than anything else, I tune into ESPN. So the first two picks go down, just as everyone thought, and then into a commercial. And while it's on commercial, the pick comes out for San Diego. But, of course, they're not. Goodell's not going to step up to the microphone until they're back from commercial. Now, for those listeners out there that aren't as educated in the draft, or maybe this is their first draft they watch, the ESPN used to, and they still do, have cameras on all the players and sometimes the bivouac at people's houses, and they get the reaction when the team calls. And they used to televise this, which you would then you as a viewer would know who the team picked, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes before Goodell makes the announcement. Well, they stopped televising that part, but we all know the cameras are still on there. So they come back from commercial, and this blowhard Chris Berman gets up there and says, who are the Chargers going to pick? Gruden and Kuiper give their opinion. It should be an offensive lineman. They're being company men, making good TV. Berman sits there, and he goes, well, you know what, guys? I think that they might do surprise everybody. I'm going to go with Bosa. And he says it just like that. He wants reaction from the other people up there on the stage with him, but they don't indulge. They were like wrestlers not selling a move because they're angry at their opponent in there. And it was fantastic. It's so obvious that Berman knew who the pick was. He saw the reaction from Joey Bosa taking the call from San Diego. But he wanted all the viewers to think that he's just this Svengali when all he is just some jackass who doesn't know his ass from a hole in the ground. I'm done.
Well done, Rex. Well done. I would add to that, if you watch the reaction of Kuiper and Lewis Riddick when he did that, especially Lewis Riddick, the look on his face was priceless when he was like, I think
I'm not the only one that noticed this then, right? You noticed it too?
Oh, I totally noticed it. It was like, I don't know who you're trying to fool right now, but you're not fooling anyone. And it's kind
of. I suggest to all our listeners out there, I don't know how good a coverage NFL Networks is on draft day. Again, out of force of habit, I always watch ESPN, but no more. NFL Network is what I'll be watching tonight and from this draft on.
Well, Neil, you had mentioned something about NFL Network in regards to our podcast today.
Well, yeah, I think we have more analysts on here today than the NFL Network, so that's good news. The one thing I would say about Chris Berman is I just can't listen to him because he sounds like he's chewing a mouthful of wasps.
Before we jump into the Bosa and more, let's come back to the Jared Goff, because besides Joe Montana, they were comparing Goff to Aaron Rodgers, Brian, and I want to get sort of your thoughts on that. What do you think of Goff being compared to Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, I get it that they're both Cal quarterbacks, but I feel like that's kind of paint-by-numbers analysis. I don't think anybody really expects that he'll come in and be Aaron Rodgers. Anybody who is probably needs to get their head examined. But I guess hope springs eternal for teams this time of year. And if the Rams need to say that Jared Goff is going to be just like Aaron Rodgers to fill seats or sell jerseys, then more power to him.
So,
I mean, let's face it, typically he's going to be more closer to Kyle Bowler, another Cal quarterback.
I think that's fair. And I think when you're talking about the face of the franchise, this is the other thing that got me. Jared Goff is now the face of a franchise that is now in a city that hasn't had football in 20 years. I don't know how well the NFL was hyping it up. ESPN was hyping it up like, oh, LA is fully behind this team. They can't wait for football back here in LA. And honestly, Jared Goff being the face of that franchise, while any player is going to have trouble dealing with that sort of pressure, you're now talking about a guy who doesn't necessarily have the talent to bring a winning culture to a team. And listen, Jared, if you're listening, and I know you're not, I apologize for all of these things that I'm saying. I'm just saying you're in a bad spot, my friend, and I wish you the best of luck, and hopefully you can make me wrong. But at this particular point in time, I look at the Rams and I go, Jeff Fisher's gone next year. Jared Goff has got maybe 2 years, right? Do we think he's going to get more than 2 years to try and prove himself? I mean, the Rams are in a lousy spot. That's how I'm going to kind of leave it. Let's move now to the Chargers. So Laremy Tunsil, who, and this is where the story begins, was considered the number one player for months and months and months. Now, all of a sudden, the Chargers come up. They do kind of have an offensive line need. They can grab that number one player. Instead, they go completely off the radar and take Joey Bosa. And when I say completely off the radar, even our Chargers superfan wrote in, I'm absolutely shocked. I didn't hear Bosa's name attached to the Chargers once in the past 2 to 3 months. I have to believe that Telesco thinks he's going to be the best player in the draft, considering draft Knicks pegged him as someone who doesn't fit the 3-4. Tom Telesco has rarely let me down in the draft, but I can't say I wasn't flabbergasted by the pick. The Chargers haven't had a true game-changing pass rusher since Merriman, so if they believe Bosa will be that guy, I'm on board with the selection. It's certainly an interesting pick. Who's got a thought on Joey Bosa here to the Chargers?
I can't believe they made this pick, because not only does he not fit their 3-4, they play in a division where the other three opponents have outstanding edge rushers, and they have an aging quarterback that's never been known for his mobility. So why they didn't solidify that offensive line? They have the receivers. They got presumably a running back, but yet they pick a defensive lineman that may have topped out on his ability and doesn't fit their defense.
The bit I didn't get is, surely this is McCoy's year, you know, his final year to really keep that job, and the window isn't open that much anyway, because Rivers has probably got 2 years left maximum, so he's got to win now. Why is he picking a guy where you've got to protect the quarterback in that division? If you don't, you're toast anyway when you're facing the Chiefs and Khalil Mack for the Raiders. So if you don't keep Rivers upright and get it out of his hands, then it's game over anyway. So this is a really, really strange pick for me.
And as much as I'm down on the Broncos, they got the Broncos defense to face there as well.
Exactly.
So I totally agree with you. It's an interesting pick. It's a head scratcher. We'll watch more. But this sort of was the beginning of a thought that, oh, Laremy Tunsil, not quite the player we thought. And this is when, at least on ESPN, when all of a sudden it was like, well, 10 minutes before the draft, someone hacked Laremy Tunsil's Twitter account and posted this picture. And I was like, well, one, no one hacked his account. Someone knew his password and somebody wanted to do some damage to Laremy Tunsil. The second thing I thought was, he's wearing a gas mask, so at least he's doing something right. Although I ended up seeing the whole video, and I guess the apparatus was hooked up to the gas mask in a way where inhaling was in fact possible, and probably, I don't know, leads to a bigger high. Who knows? In any case, I mentioned this earlier about the Laremy Tunsil pot rumors, and we all sort of thought, well, you know, in some states it's now legal. How is the NFL going to handle this? And to me, it appears the NFL doesn't want anything to do with this sort of thing. So Laremy Tunsil drops. We get to Dallas. We know Laremy Tunsil's not going there. They're pretty much stuck on Ezekiel Elliott. That we knew they kind of had this desire to bring in another running back in Dallas. I'm going to sort of gloss over that because we've talked about the Cowboys and the running game. Ezekiel Elliott is a good fit there, although they probably wanted to go with a defensive player. They didn't. We'll see what they do with the rest of the draft. Then we come to the Jaguars, another place where Laremy Tunsil perhaps could fall. At this point, I'm saying to my son, they got their choice, Laremy Tunsil or Jalen Ramsey. I was big on the Jaguars going after Josh Norman. They didn't end up with him. He went to your team, Neil. But Jalen Ramsey ends up in Jacksonville, and I got to think they're super ecstatic.
Yeah, I think this is terrific. Probably one of the picks of the first round in terms of a really, really high grade. What a smashing player. Can't believe he didn't go to Dallas. But let's not get back onto the running back in round one conversation. Yeah, Ramsey, superb. I do still think he'll end up at free safety. I'm not convinced he's a blue chip corner, but I do think he's a blue chip free safety.
Everything I saw about Ramsey was that he's actually a better corner, press corner, than he is sort of a safety playing out in space. Let's see here, Jason. Do you have a thought on Jalen Ramsey? Your team probably was interested in Ramsey at one point.
Yeah, absolutely the worst spot for Ramsey to end up in my mind because, you know, I'm pretty big on Ramsey. A lot of indications that, you know, he's going to be a playmaker in this league and extremely smart pickup for the Jaguars, especially playing, you know, now that the division is trying to go more offensive when you think about Luck and Osweiler and, you know, Mariota. So, you know, a lot more passing attack in the South, you know, as that division tries to, you know, reclaim some kind of relevance. Definitely, Jaguars are definitely on the right track down there. With a pick like that, they're definitely going to be able to contend for the division this year in my mind. So, you know, they already had some good offensive weapons, two good receivers. Definitely a good pickup for them with the Ramsey pick there. It's one of my worst fears.
So next up comes the Baltimore Ravens. And there's another thought, hey, this is perfect for the Ravens. Laremy Tunsil has fallen right into their lap. They couldn't be happier. And they pick Ronnie Stanley, the offensive tackle from Notre Dame. And this is where the Laremy Tunsil stuff goes completely bonkers. But Rex, talk to me about your pick and your thoughts as the sixth pick of the draft was coming up.
I think the Ravens were plenty disappointed that Bosa and Ramsey were picked. I think that they were looking at one of those two players. There was word out that the Ravens tried to trade up to get Dallas's pick and that they might have been trying to trade up to get Ezekiel Elliott. I doubt that highly. I would have to have Ozzie Newsome tell me that himself if I'm going to believe that. I think they were trying to trade in front of the Jaguars to get Ramsey. Anyway, as far as Stanley, Ozzie Newsome has said that that's who they had rated higher than Tunsil all along. I don't know if that's true. Again, who knows with their draft board. I do know that Stanley is supposed to be a better all-around offensive tackle than Tunsil because Tunsil was rarely asked to run block. Now, Stanley isn't exactly a strong run blocker, but at least he did some of that at Notre Dame. Basically, my opinion of this draft is I like the pick, but it's a collective yawn for me. I mean, we have some other needs. I was hoping for something more explosive, like a Bosa or a Ramsey, or I've said all along my favorite player, and I think the best player in this draft is Miles Jack. I can't believe he's into the second round, and I think that this is going to – the first 10 picks of the second round is going to be so exciting tonight. But again, Stanley, I like the pick, but I can't get very excited over picking an offensive tackle. But it surely means Eugene Monroe's days in a Raven uniform are probably over. Hopefully we can trade him for a late-round pick, but more than likely he'll be after June 1st cut.
Real quick, I got an opinion on Miles Jack. That'll be coming up when we get to the end of our coverage here of the first round. But go ahead, Greg.
I was very happy that they did not take Buckner because I thought Buckner was the classic Ravens fit where they let an elite player fall to them. And then next thing you know, we have this D lineman for 10 years, you know, causing havoc on our offensive line. So I've actually said, thank you, baby Jesus, that he fell.
I think Buckner would have been a good pick too. But, and again, Ozzie says we go best player available, but need has to come into it somehow. And you got to remember, last year they picked Carl Davis, who showed in the third round, I believe, who showed promise. Then we have Tim Jernigan, and we have Brandon Williams. We have Brent Urban, who showed some flashes when he was finally able to be healthy last year. We have a lot of young defensive linemen. I have to believe that if he had Buckner rated high, he probably just said, you know, we can use this resource someplace else.
So coming up next, we have the San Francisco 49ers. DeForest Buckner is their pick. Could they have gone Laremy Tunsil? I don't know, but I don't think you can argue with the fact that they took a very highly rated defensive player. San Francisco has a lot of needs, so they definitely looking to improve their team there. Can't complain that they took the defensive player over the offensive tackle. Next up at number 8, Tennessee trades back into the spot. They get the pick from Cleveland, who got it from Philadelphia, who got it from Miami. Tennessee's back in. Everyone says, oh, it's Laremy Tunsil. And instead it becomes Jack Conklin, the offensive tackle from Michigan State. And now we have a total free-for-all when it comes to Laremy Tunsil. Jason, your thoughts on the Titans trading out, trading back to get an offensive tackle that ultimately was not the one projected as the number one guy off the board.
Yeah, absolutely. If you notice in our mock draft that we did 2.0, you know, I took Conklin, and I had a gut feeling that's kind of where the Titans were going after having visits with him. He definitely fits what it is that they're trying to do with, you know, he has a bit of a nastiness with him. You know, and everybody kept saying the Titans is left tackle, left tackle. You just can't waste a pick on, like, on a Taylor Lewan a few years ago and turn right around and move him to right tackle and try to fit somebody else in. As I stated before, that's trying to fix two problems at once. So now you have an opportunity to keep Taylor on the left. You'll be able to bring in, you know, Conklin on the right side. You know, as we just stated about Ramsey, you got to be able to protect the quarterbacks in this division. And you know, a lot of Titans fans at first were pretty upset because they said, "Man, you gave up a third this year and a second next year." But what people are forgetting is, you know, they literally traded out of the first pick, picked up 2 second round picks, a third round pick, next year's first, next year's third. So right off the bat, even though you give up a next year second, you still have 2 first next year. You have 2 thirds next year. You're going to be able to wheel and deal some more today if you want to. You know, I just feel like it's a perfect fit for what we're trying to do. We definitely had to build the offensive line. You know, the Titans have a tremendous amount of needs. So, you know, I'm not overly excited about the pick. I think it was the right pick. But the second round today is the day that we're going to see exactly what this general manager is made of and what kind of moves that we can make today to continue to solidify this team.
I said last night when I was asked what were my overall thoughts on this first round on our Slack group, that the Titans were the winners of this draft so far. I think you end up getting a player that's going to come in and make an impact for your team right away. You've got 2 seconds. You've got 2 firsts next year and 2 thirds next year. That's the way you work a draft. And we're going to get to Cleveland a little bit later. But and honestly, when you look at what Cleveland has done to acquire more draft picks, I don't think Cleveland has done enough the way that the Titans have done. I think there's a huge difference between what the two teams did this draft last night.
Oh, and absolutely. And, you know, the big thing is today having 3 second round picks, and even though they traded it up, you know, last night to get up to 8, they didn't give up any of those seconds today. And as we all know, we were just talking about a couple players that, you know, kind of fell out of the first that we were expecting to go to the first. You know, the Titans have an opportunity to pick up potentially 2, you know, right off the bat here that could have been first round picks, you know, but everybody's always said that, you know, the power in this draft this year is between 15 and 50, and to have 3 picks, you know, in that period of time. Just so far, I'm excited about what we can do as long as we don't kind of veer off a path of what we're currently on with these next 3 picks. You know, it definitely is going to reshape the franchise and hopefully set us in the right direction. So I'm pretty excited about last night's pick. Like I said, it's not one of those splashy picks that you would get with a Ramsey or an Elliott or someone like that, but definitely a solid pick for what the Titans are trying to accomplish.
So next we have the Chicago Bears trading into the 9 spot with Tampa Bay. Dan, before we get into the Chicago pick, your thoughts on Tampa Bay trading out of this spot?
I was quite happy with it because we didn't move down that far and there were still 2 corners there and we knew they were going to be there, and that was probably the direction that Jason Light wanted to go. But we picked up that 4th round, and I think it kind of worked for the Bears in retrospect because they were worried that the Giants were going to take their linebacker. So happy from a Bucs perspective, and I think the Bears managed to get the player that they wanted and was highest on their draft board, really.
So the Bears end up taking, and if somebody can help me out in our Slack group and see what Chicago Tom thought about this, that would be fantastic. The Bears end up taking Leonard Floyd, the offensive linebacker from Georgia. A lot of thought was Chicago moved up to this spot because they knew New York was looking for that linebacker. They come away with the linebacker. New York ends up taking one of those corners that you alluded to, Dan, in Eli Apple. I think the Giants were pretty upset about the fact that a lot of the impact players that they thought would fall to them ended up not falling to them, and they go with the cornerback. They do have a need at cornerback, but I can't imagine they're happy either. I'm curious what Sam's thoughts were there. Anybody find Tom's thoughts on the Bears pick?
Yeah, Tom is a little bit worried about about Floyd being overly slim. He needs to put some weight on his frame. He is a Georgia pass rusher. Of course, they don't have a great recent history of pass rushers coming out of Georgia. And he's fascinated to watch and see if he blossoms. I think Tom sounds pretty nonplussed by the whole thing. And I'd be with him there. I think it's a terrible pick. That guy's a bust. Mm. You heard it here first.
How about Sam? Do we have thoughts from our Giants superfan on what the Giants did with Eli Apple? Like I said, I can't imagine too many Giants fans were thrilled with picking a cornerback at that point.
Yeah, I don't know what Sam's thoughts were exactly, but I agree with you, Jay. I thought they spent so much money on that defense this year, and then to spend a top 10 pick on Eli Apple just seemed like a huge waste. I mean, kind of going back to like Baltimore and some of the guys that took left tackles, don't they want to protect Eli? Isn't Eli their franchise at this point?
You would think. To me, the Giants pick made very little sense considering some of the other choices that they had there. But I'm not going to continue to harp on that. Dan, we're going to come back to you because your Buccaneers finally make a pick, and it's Vernon Hargraves III. What are your thoughts with the cornerback from Florida?
I was fairly happy because it was exactly the same as Mike Evans a couple of years ago. You knew that was the player they were going after. They knew it would probably be there at the selection. They managed to move back and get that extra pick in the fourth and still pick him up. He kind of fits what Mike Smith wants to do in the zone defense. So from that standpoint, I can't really argue too much. He's consistent. He tackles, which is really important when you're playing off. And I think he'll step in straight away opposite Brent Grimes and probably be a day one starter, which when you got a defense that was as poor as ours last year on the back end, I think that's really important. You need that impact player straight away. But I was so shocked that the Giants didn't take him. I kind of thought, oh, okay. Well, this kind of suits us down to the ground. But I think he's going to do quite well, and I think they'll cover up some of his... It'd be interesting to see how they use Ultron Verner, actually, because he got frozen out last year. He was a Pro Bowler the year before, got him in free agency. But he didn't play that much. But with Mike Smith coming over, it'd be interesting if he phases in Hargreaves rather than just putting him straight out there and use Verner a bit more.
It will. We'll definitely see what happens there in Tampa Bay. They're a team to watch on the rise for sure. New Orleans, obviously, with their defensive problems, they go with Sheldon Rankins, the defensive tackle from Louisville. And now, finally, pick 13, Miami comes up and they take Laremy Tunsil. Here's my thoughts on Laremy Tunsil to the Miami Dolphins. I'm not sure there could have been a worse team for a kid who now has some clear off-the-field issues to deal with and manage than the Miami Dolphins, which was a team in total disarray. Now, I get there's a new staff in place, but there's still players there like Ndamukong Suh, like Mario Williams. These guys don't necessarily have the best, let's say, locker room leadership for a kid that's going to come in with a whole bunch of problems. I think this is terrible. This was a terrible pick by Miami and a terrible spot for Laremy Tunsil to add in. And now, going back to the way that this was covered, Laramie's interview with ESPN was short. He didn't answer any of the questions. He refused to give up any sort of information about what was going on. Then this morning, I managed to see his interview with Deion Sanders. It was a much different interview where he was talking about this is going to fuel him. He's a man now. He understands how he needs to act. He knows that this is going to fuel him. He's going to go out and he's going to prove everybody wrong. From that interview, I'm a little bit more impressed with him, but considering that he didn't give the exact same interview on ESPN, I'm still concerned that this is a horrible, horrible spot for him. Brian, we haven't heard a lot from you. What are your thoughts here? Laremy Tunsil in Miami.
I was happy to finally see somebody pick him, and I think there is kind of a crying need for offensive line help in Miami. I totally hear what you're saying, that the off-field incidents with him and Miami's penchant for collecting those type of players and kind of putting them in a position where they're going to be exposed to more opportunities for off-field adventures probably isn't the best for him as a person, but I understand the pick, and it didn't shock me that he went there.
So now here's the thing, and I don't want this to become a Deflategate thing, but I'm not the only fan out there that thinks that Roger Goodell is horrible for the NFL, because he got booed every single time he came up to make the announcement of the pick. And the only times he didn't get booed was when he brought up kids to announce the Chicago Bears pick and the cancer survivor to announce the Denver Broncos pick. It was like he was playing the heel in a wrestling match. And by the way, congratulations to Eric Young, my boy, now in the WWE at NXT. Fantastic work out of you, my friend. But Roger Goodell, if you do not come down hard on Laremy Tunsil, this just goes to show how wishy-washy the commissioner of this league is. Oh, I'm going to suspend the best, our star quarterback in the league for 4 games for maybe deflating some balls. But this kid, well, we got to give him a second chance, you know, because he hasn't done anything to tarnish the shield, so to speak. Anybody want to go off on the commissioner here? Feel free.
I think the commissioner is doing a fine job, and I think you're off base here.
I was going to say that's a bit unfair, because Tunsil's not under his jurisdiction. He was still in college. That's nothing to do with the NFL. He can't suspend a guy for a video 5 years ago. That's just ridiculous.
And the problem, as we just discovered in a court ruling, he can suspend anybody whenever he wants for whatever he wants.
As long as they're covered under the collective bargaining agreement, which Tunsil was not.
Exactly. Exactly. And the issue with Tunsil is more decision making. It really annoys me when you listen to these guys on ESPN and NFL Network, and they're saying they seem to intimate it was the pot smoking than the bong that was the issue. It's not. It's the fact that he let someone film it and get out there. That's just ridiculous. You know it hurts your draft stock. You've seen what's happened to guys in the past go undrafted. I mean, even Warren Sapp, he went in the teens because he was caught smoking pot. So I was down there, especially. I mean, he's got on Ndamukong Suh as well down there. That guy's going to be a head case in 2 years.
Maybe it was actually Miami that actually, you know, hacked his Twitter account to make sure that this actually worked out for them. But something I heard this morning was, you know, that he could have actually fallen farther than Miami. But Tunsil, Adam Gass, you know, Tannenbaum, they all have the same agent. And from what I understand is that Jimmy Sexton was extremely nervous and actually was working the phone heavily with Miami last night. And that he actually wasn't their first choice is the major rumors out there today.
I think there's a few things here. I think, first of all, Jay, that's a very tenuous link to drag, just an attempt to drag the Deflategate into the pod. We've been going 45 minutes. Well done for not getting it in sooner. with Tunsil, I felt really sorry for him at the end. I thought, oh, please, somebody choose him. Just pick him and get him out of there. A big A-plus for Deion Sanders, I think, overall during the whole evening. I can't usually stand the guy, but I thought he was terrific last night. And in terms of Tunsil in Miami, a bit worried. Reports this morning suggesting they're going to play him at guard, and I just don't like the whole square pegs and round holes scenario with players. But I just hope that his off-field problems, which were you guys might know more about than I do, with his stepfather and all this, that gets sorted out. And I think Miami, if they play the cards right, could have a terrific player. Because remember, a week or two ago, this was the consensus pick as the best player in the draft without any shadow of a doubt.
I think on the field, Laremy Tunsil makes perfect sense. I think it's all the off-the-field things where I am concerned that it's not a fit there for Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah.
All right, next up, the Oakland Raiders. The Raiders, we know, They always make that interesting pick. But here's Monty's thoughts on Carl Joseph, the safety, being picked at this point. I was hoping that Carl Joseph would fall to the Raiders in round two of the Superfan Super Mock. When he didn't, I was disappointed. I wanted a safety, inside linebacker, and defensive tackle in rounds one through three. We got the best safety in the draft. F the haters. Hopefully they get a linebacker that can cover tight ends in the second round, and the Raiders are competing with the Jags for wild card this year and home field advantage in 2017. I have to say, Monty, your draft pick made the Raiders look a little uglier to me. I'm not so hot on the Raiders right now with that draft pick of Carl Joseph. Again, he is a fit. I just think you took him a little bit too early.
I think it was early, but I think this guy's going to play in the league for a long time. So who cares?
Yeah, I got news for Monty. The Raiders are going to be competing for the West title, not a wild card.
I think the Raiders will be competing for that West title, but I think, well, we'll see. After the Oakland Raiders, we have the Cleveland Browns. They take the wide receiver out of Baylor, Corey Coleman. He's a speed guy. He is a fit. He is a need fit for the Cleveland Browns. However, and I'm coming back to you, Jason, and comparing what the Browns did with their two draft trades and what the Titans did. So the Browns come away with a wide receiver who is a speed guy. He's not a route guy, so he still needs to learn the position, because we know that you can't teach speed, but wide receivers, rookie wide receivers, that all they have is speed on their side, takes a much longer time for them to get acclimated to the NFL than it does for the possession guys who sort of know how to run routes. They got a third, two fourths, a 2017 first, a 2018 second, and they have 11 picks left today. The Titans get an offensive tackle who they're going to be able to start right away and will make an impact right away. 2 seconds, the 2017 first and third. To me, the Titans just did a way better job at managing their draft picks than the Cleveland Browns did. Jason, go ahead.
Well, you know, I'm probably a little biased about it, but I agree with you, you know, 100% on that. I think that we got better quality picks overall than Cleveland did. You know, Cleveland did need a receiver, but I think that overall the aspect of getting the receiver, yeah, they think they got the top receiver in the draft. But as you just said, we got a rookie wide receiver down there. It'll be in Cleveland now. They still got RG3 potentially throwing them the ball. So, you know, even if the receiver catches on, is RG3 going to be able to catch on? You know, I just don't know if it made a splash of a pick like Cleveland thought it was going to. You know, at this point, though, do we really expect anything else from Cleveland? I mean, I'm saying that even as a Titans fan, so that should give you an indication there. But, you know, I see that they at least maybe potentially have an idea of what they would like to do. But at the same time, I think they're kind of just throwing darts at a board and hoping that some of them stick. But, you know, at the same time, like I said, they did acquire a lot of picks. They have a lot of needs. And, you know, they did take the best player on the board in their mind at that point. And, you know, from what I see, they're pretty excited about it. But at the same time, you know, it all depends on what their quarterback does. It all depends on what their offensive line can do to hold up their quarterback. So, you know, hopefully in time that pick will work out for them. But I'm excited that the Titans obviously were able to make a little bit better the deal so far, it seems like, out of the two teams that are trading the most.
Greg, having the Cleveland Browns in your division, it seems to me like the Browns sort of have the right idea, so they get points for trying, but they get an F in terms of effort.
Yeah, I like Coleman as a player, but for Cleveland, they have all these midgets playing wide receiver already. I mean, Treadwell, Dotson are both on the board. They're both big receivers. You might have an inaccurate quarterback. I mean, look at what Carolina does. Carolina brings in these 6'4 wide receivers for Newton, who's not very accurate. And I feel like that's exactly what Cleveland should have done. So I love the wide receiver selection, but I think they should have gone with one of the bigger guys.
I disagree a little bit with both of you guys, or all you guys so far. And only because the speed element to Coleman's game, I feel like, is exactly what Cleveland needs, because it's not like you expect Cleveland and RG3 to dink and dunk their way down the field. If they're going to score points, it's going to be on those big plays, and that's exactly what Coleman brings.
All right.
Yeah, the one thing that RG3 does well is it does throw a beautiful deep ball.
Yeah, but the problem is, and it made me laugh, I was watching Mike Mayock on NFL Network, and he said, this guy is great. He's like Percy Harvin. When he's got the ball in his hands, he's special. The only thing he has problems with is running a route tree and catching the ball consistently, which is exactly what you pay a wide receiver to do. So I can only see this guy being a bust.
I'm not a big fan of what Cleveland did. I think Cleveland still got a lot of work to do. And as I mentioned, it's like they know exactly what they need to do and they're trying to do it. They're just not pulling it off. The reward is not justifying the means here. Detroit comes up next, and I kind of thought maybe there'd be a wide receiver run starting now, especially since Cleveland took a wide receiver off the board. Detroit obviously has a wide receiver need. They go with the offensive tackle. Can't really complain too much there. They do have Matthew Stafford. They do need to keep him at least upright. So it's a decent pick there. Atlanta, my former boyfriends from last year, go with the safety here, Keanu Neal. And Greg, you have some insights onto this pick in regards to the superfans' thoughts.
Yeah, in the pre-draft process, I kind of hassled everyone to enter their top 40 guys and the 40 guys they thought were most likely to get picked in the first round. And less than half of the people, we had 22 super fans that came back, and less than half thought this guy was a first-round talent. And that just kind of screams to me, because there's only three guys that were as low as him, and the other guys are at the end of the first round. So I just feel like in the mid-teens here, this was maybe a bit of a reach by Atlanta. And I mean, you had other defensive playmakers out there, so I wonder why they would like Neal so much.
I have a long-suffering Atlanta fan as a friend, and he was incandescent last night. He was, I think he shut himself in the freezer overnight to try and cool down. He was just furious.
Indianapolis goes with the center, Ryan Kelly. That was a guy that I know, Neil, you coveted quite a bit. So he'll help keep Andrew Luck upright, which was definitely a problem for Indianapolis last season. Buffalo takes, I think, Buffalo may have gotten a big steal in the draft, at least in the first round, getting Shaq Lawson, the defensive end from Clemson. It is interesting to note that Clemson players, after they graduate from Clemson, tend to go to Buffalo. And, you know, lots of talk about Rex's son being a player down in Clemson. Whether that has anything to do with all these Clemson players going to Buffalo, who knows? But I do think Shaq Lawson can be an impact player for Buffalo. The Jets go with an outside linebacker and Darren Lee from Ohio State. Ohio State, I believe that was the sixth or the fifth player. I forget at this point. There were a lot of Ohio State players off the board last night.
I want to say that I love this pick for that defense. I thought Lee was could be a real difference maker in the modern NFL. And I think Andrew was equally as excited. I just love the fit.
So next up comes the Houston Texans, who traded one spot with Washington to pick wide receiver from Notre Dame, Will Fuller. Now, Washington, right afterwards, picks the wide receiver from TCU, Josh Doctson, who was the wide receiver that Minnesota coveted. I know Davey was a big fan of Josh Doctson. Minnesota ends up with Laquon Treadwell. So, Neil, since your team was right in the thick of all this, give me sort of your thoughts on the breakdown of these wide receivers in this spot.
Well, first of all, I love Scott McLuhan, and he's certainly testing my trust in him with this pick. I think I've said before, I don't like any of the wide receivers in this class. I have a feeling we've probably got maybe the best, if not, well, certainly the second best of the receivers. I like Treadwell better, but you can also understand it from a Washington point of view. I had no idea why Houston felt the need to trade up one spot, and we'll take the sixth-round pick. That's no problem at all. But, yeah, we've got Pete Waiter and Deshaun Jackson. They're both got 1 year left in their contract, so you could say he's looking forward to next year when one of them, or at least one of them, is gone. Maybe both of them have gone. and he'll step in. He's a good size. We don't really have that sort of physicality at the wide receiver position, and he'll bring that. But, well, let's see. I thought we would have gone, once Kelly had gone, I thought we would have gone D-line, but there we go.
As I mentioned, I know Davey, the Minnesota fan, was disappointed that Josh Doctson wasn't available. James, our Texans super fan, writes, Will Fuller was one of two wide receivers that both I and the Texans would have been happy with in round one. In Mock 1.0, we ended up with Corey Coleman. In Mock 2.0, he was able to trade back and get Fuller. However, with the Browns taking Coleman and a lot of wide receiver needy teams picking directly after the Texans, I think it was stupid that we had to give up a sixth round pick to move up one spot to do it, though. As mentioned in the mock draft recap, we need a fast wide receiver to help stretch the field. Hopefully Fuller doesn't turn into Jacoby Jones 2.0 and will instead develop into Torrey Smith. Over the next couple days, hopefully we can add a center, tight end, and some D linemen. But if a good player slips, then grabbing best available would also be just fine. I will say about Torrey Smith, though, James, and Rex, you can sort of attest to this as well. It took a while for Torrey Smith to develop.
Well, Torrey Smith was a nine and a slant and a post pattern runner. That's what he still is. That's what he's always going to be. He did well his rookie year. We let him go because he got paid as a number one wide receiver, and the Ravens realized he wasn't. Now the 49ers realize he wasn't. I don't quite agree with you that it took him a while to develop. He topped out pretty quick, and that's where he stayed.
All right. That's a fair enough assessment. All right. Moving on to the next picks here. We had all the wide receivers. William Jackson III, the cornerback, goes to Cincinnati. I know they had to have been, Simon had to have been depressed that there wasn't a wide receiver available at that point. They do have a need at corner, though, so it made sense. Greg, we come to you, and I already know what you feel about this because we talked a little bit before we started recording. Artie Burns, the cornerback from Miami, ends up in Pittsburgh.
Well, and really these three picks, 24, 25, and 26, William Jackson was, by all accounts, the guy that the Steelers really wanted. And, of course, Cincinnati, who always has to take a freaking cornerback, takes him right in front of us. And then I honestly had never heard the name Artie Burns until this past week. And there were some rumors about us being interested in him in the second round, which a lot of people thought was maybe a reach there. So I'm a little bit dismayed here. And then to add on to it, maybe I'm going to jump you out of order here, but the Paxton Lynch trade that went right after us, what they got exactly, the extra third round pick for Seattle to move back, was exactly what a lot of the Steeler beat reporters were speculating they were going to make with the deal that the Steelers were going to make with the Broncos heading into it. So if William Jackson III wasn't there, I wanted to trade back, and I saw both things happen on either side of my pick. And so I'm pissed. So,
that's going backwards now. Simon, English Simon, who's our Bengals super fan, mentioned that the Bengals got the best guy on their board after seeing all the wide receivers they had first round grades on get selected by former coordinators and the Texans. But he does love the pick. Can't help but think that Williams Jackson III is an upgrade on Dre Kirkpatrick, and the fact that the Steelers wanted him makes it even more sweet. Going back to Sam for the Giants, he can't believe the Giants passed on Laremy Tunsil after sleeping it off. I think if the Giants wanted Apple, they should have traded back. I don't think he's a top 10 pick, especially with Tunsil still there. This is a dude who was supposed to go first overall 2 weeks ago and would have fixed a lot of the Giants' issues. So interesting thoughts there from those super fans. Next up is the Denver Broncos. And again, I'm very down on the Broncos. I sort of get it. I'm going to sort of try and channel my inner Andrew, our Jets super fan, which will immediately make me feel dirty. But the Broncos won with horrible quarterback play last year. The thinking here is, well, if we got a rookie who's learning and he does have some skills, we can still win because we still have a lot of those same pieces in place. That said, that defense is not the same defense that they had last year. They've lost some of those defensive players. And I don't think Paxton Lynch is a first round quarterback at all. I mean, I asked the Cleveland Browns super fan that a couple weeks ago, and he was like, oh, please, God, no. Please help us, no. So, Denver, congratulations. You got the quarterback in the first round that not even the Cleveland super fan wanted.
Well, I believe the Broncos, in their mind, were trying to just figure out a way to, you know, get a little bit less of a contract. I mean, you got to think about it. Paxton Lynch is going to cost them $9 million, you know, basically over 4 years compared to 72 with Brock. And, yes, it doesn't obviously make their team better now, but I think they're looking for 2 or 3 years down the road. And, you know, at this point, they knew they had to do something, and they figured that probably came, you know, cheaper than Kaepernick did or, you know, the other options that they have. And don't forget, you know, they still got Sanchez out there, and we all know he's the future of the NFL, you know. So they definitely have, you know, in their mind, I think it was more of a cost effort. You know, they still got to pay Von Miller. They got to figure things to that degree out. So ultimately, I believe that's the reason why they went in that direction.
I wonder if we'll now see Kaepernick getting cut and Denver picking him up off the streets.
I mean, that's going to be the question now, because Colin Kaepernick, Sam Bradford, these are two cornerbacks that were rumored to be traded to the Broncos. It appears now that there are no teams in the hunt for either of those two quarterbacks. So they're either going to sit on those teams and make millions of dollars to hold a clipboard, which honestly, isn't that the best job in the world? Or they're going to get traded or cut. Honestly, I have to ask, maybe this is just a stupid fan's perspective, but if I'm going to get paid $12 million a year just to stand on the sidelines and hold a clipboard, I'll take that job. Anybody else with me?
Tommy,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Sam Bradford, Colin Kaepernick, just thank your lucky stars that you're going to be making enough money that you're set for life. So even if you don't get picked up by another team when your contract is over, you're set for life, dudes. You're set for life. All right. Kenny Clark, the defensive tackle, goes to Green Bay. Brian, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was really excited when we were up on the clock. You couldn't have asked for a better setup for the Packers, with our biggest needs being inside linebacker and D-line. By the time Green Bay was up, there were only three defensive linemen that had gone: Buckner, Lawson, and Rankins, and only one inside linebacker in Darren Lee. So loads of options. We had our choice between Ragland, A'shaun Robinson, Jarran Reed, and Miles freaking Jack still sitting there just waiting to be taken. And we sit back and we take Kenny Clark, who is really the quintessential Ted Thompson pick. It's a guy that doesn't get any media coverage. Most of the casual fans have never heard of him, but it's a guy that they have faith in. And, you know, he certainly doesn't have the same sizzle as those guys I just mentioned. And he's not necessarily the same guy I would have taken if I'm in Ted's position. But Packer fans, have faith. Ted's better at this than you are, and better at this than most of his peers. Clark fills a crying need for us on the defensive line, and he's a guy who can step in immediately. And that's something we're going to need, because our depth at that position group has really eroded this offseason. B.J. Raji took a year leave here, so we're dealing with the fallout from that. We got another guy in Mike Pennell, who was kind of more of a depth guy last year that we were hoping could step in and play in Raji's place, and then he gets suspended for the first four games. So we're going to need some players, probably multiple rookies, to step in and play defensive line for us this year. Clark's a great run stuffer, and we were pretty poor against the run last year. I'm not as excited about the pick as if we would have picked one of those other guys that I mentioned. I was really excited to see Ragland and Miles Jack still sitting there. But you got to have faith in Ted. He knows what he's doing. And by 3 years from now, maybe we look back on this and say, you know what, he's doing a good job here. So I guess keep the faith, and we'll see what comes in round two.
All right, pick 28 comes up on the board. It's the Kansas City Chiefs. They get what I know Chiefs Nick was doing in every single one of the mock drafts, a trade. So the Chiefs trade out with the San Francisco 49ers. And let me just read you what Chiefs Nick had to say about this. Worst pick, 49ers. Thanks for the extra selections, but how good does a guard, Joshua Garnett, have to be worth a second, a fourth, and a sixth? Maybe they'll draft a Pro Bowl kicker with the 7th they got from us in the trade. Once again, the San Francisco 49ers, and maybe this is a Chip Kelly thing, like, I don't get it. This made zero sense in the world to me.
Well, his Chip's guard's really bad in Philadelphia last year, right? So he's fixing that problem now, I guess.
He's not in Philadelphia anymore. Yeah, this was a bad move by San Francisco. Great for Kansas City. They did exactly what they wanted to do. And so we will move on. Joshua Garnett, a lot of pressure on you, my friend. I'm sure you'll be good. I know I saw our good buddy there, Ross Tucker, admit that this was kind of a gutsy move by Balky to try and get that extra fifth year guaranteed. We know that there's different contracts for first rounders, second rounders, third rounders. So this was perhaps a contractual move, but still they gave up a lot to get him. Arizona is next on the board. And this is where you have a team that has a solid locker room that could handle a guy who might have some off-field issues. And that would be Laremy Tunsil's guy, Robert Kimdichie, who ends up going to Arizona. To me, it's a perfect fit in terms of on the field and off the field. They've got a coaching staff and a locker room that can help the kid out if that's what he needs. Greg, talk to me a little bit about that Arizona team, because I know they're sort of the Steelers of the West.
Well, I think they view this pick as the finishing piece to get them over the hump, and I can't disagree with them. I mean, if I remember correctly, Campbell got hurt last year for Arizona, and their defensive line dropped off. So hopefully this adds another playmaker in depth for them, and maybe they can be a Carolina of 2016.
Speaking of Carolina, they take Vernon Butler, the defensive tackle from Louisiana Tech. I'm pretty sure all of Carolina was pretty happy with that choice. And then Seattle comes in and they take Jermaine Ifedi, the offensive tackle from Texas A&M. And I think I saw a stat that this is the fourth year in a row a tackle from Texas A&M was picked in the first round. Did I get that stat right?
Think so.
So, Seattle's got offensive tackle, have offensive line woes. They've had them for years. They get an offensive tackle here in the first round. All right, moving into the second. Rex, I know you had mentioned, Miles Jack is a guy that's on the board still. You're picking at number 5. I'm curious your thoughts. Miles Jack, here's my thought. If you're a team that's already had a pick, taking Miles Jack now is absolutely makes perfect sense, because the rumors that he needs microfracture surgery, you can't risk that your first pick in the draft isn't going to play football. Your second pick, kind of risky, but I think the reward that Miles Jack provides will offset the risk. So as I'm thinking of my team, the Patriots, who have yet to pick, and that number one pick, we know Cleveland's not picking first tonight. I guarantee Cleveland's not picking first tonight. If this is my second pick or even my third pick, Miles Jack makes sense. If he's your first pick, it's too risky to me. What do you think, Rex?
Well, like I said, when I talked about our first pick, I'm really excited about tonight's pick. I agree with you on Miles Jack. I haven't heard much about the microfracture surgery. What I have heard is that the doctors are worried about he may get through his first contract, but not his second. Now, he won't get into his second contract because the deal degenerates or something like that. I'm not exactly sure about that. If that were the case, then I wouldn't be so worried about it with the Ravens, because I read a stat on the Baltimore Sun this morning that only one of the last six Ravens second round picks have stayed with the team to their second contract. They usually become good and then get picked up by someone else. But as far as us picking fifth, I mean, I was just jotting them down. There's about five or six players that were projected to go in the first round that's available. So the Ravens, when they pick, will get a chance to give one of these, what the expert said was a first round pick, and every one of them fills a need for the Ravens. You got Reggie Ragland and Miles Jack at inside linebacker. Kevin Dodd can play on the edge, along with Noah Spence can play on the edge. You got cornerbacks and Kenny J. Alexander and Kyle Fuller. all of these guys can help a team, specifically my team, and the Ravens also have four fourth-round picks that they could use to trade up if they didn't want to wait around four picks if they wanted to trade up tonight and get another pick. I will say this, because I probably won't be able to join you Sunday for the total wrap-up show. Good luck to Jalen Smith. I hope he gets chosen, and I hope somehow he gets chosen by my Ravens in the fourth round.
I think that's another guy who's got that injury issue that I think will provide quite the reward for the team that gets him. It's just going to be, you're going to have to wait on him a little bit. Jason, you've got the second pick tonight. How likely is it that Tennessee takes that pick, uses that pick there at number two in the second round?
I believe that Tennessee will actually keep all their picks tonight. I may be wrong about that, but, you know, just listening there for a second, you know, don't be surprised if the Titans, you know, take a flyer on someone like a Miles Jack. But I really feel, you know, from a lot of things that I'm reading, a lot of gut feeling, I actually think that they're pretty big on Jalen Smith. And you got to think about it, with two first round picks next year, if they pick him and they're able to sit on him, that's basically like having three first round picks next year. So, you know, I believe that they'll pick a corner in the second tonight, you know, someone like a Fuller. But I just believe that that they will take all those picks tonight, and don't be surprised if they take someone like a, you know, like a Henry tonight too, tight end. Delanie Walker's in a contract year, and you know, he's definitely not getting any younger. So, like I said, I believe they'll keep all those picks tonight, and I think they'll just continuously keep addressing the team needs one by one.
Greg, the likelihood Cleveland keeps that number one pick tonight?
I think it's pretty high. They have a lot of needs. I think they've done all their wheeling and dealing they're going to do for the time being. And I actually like what Cleveland's done with the future picks. Well, one other guy I like to bring up is all of us from the 40-man roster that I made everyone fill out. Reed from Alabama is one of the unanimous guys that's still on the board, which is kind of surprising. So the defensive tackle from Alabama, I'd watch for him to go early.
Dallas is going to pick number three. Well, let's stick with Cleveland here. What's the likelihood Cleveland decides to take a guy like Miles Jack? What do we think about that, Neil?
I think there's two things there for me. I think the teams who are picking higher up the draft generally, and obviously, you know, have the most needs and the biggest holes in their rosters. And then you've got the teams like the Titans and Cleveland who have multiple selections. I think there's a real risk there that they start taking these risky deluxe style picks rather than using those picks to really build solid foundations with as little risk as possible. Obviously, risk is a big issue here in the draft, but to get those players in and then, you know, wait and take these risky picks once you're a team that's got a really solid foundation. I think we saw it in 2012 trade with Redskins and the Rams. The Rams probably didn't use their picks very well. They took players like Tavon Austin, who were really luxury picks. And I think leave Jack until the sort of better teams come in and they can take a risk. I just don't think these higher up teams are prepared enough for that.
To add on to Neil there, yep. there's starters available right now in Tennessee and Cleveland. You know,
absolutely.
Really hard to pass on day one starters.
Dan, you're
and if I can add, Cleveland is the last team in the league that can take any chances whatsoever. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, they've had multiple first-round picks in four of the last six drafts and have nothing to show for it. They have to hit on all these picks. My prediction would be they'll probably go with the most sure pick. May not be a Pro Bowler, but he'll play on that team for 8 to 10 years, and that's Reggie Ragland.
Yep, those are the foundation players you need before you can start taking luxury picks.
Dan, you're picking number eight here in tonight's draft. What are you hoping how the rest of the draft falls for you?
Well, we've got to go defensive end, really. Those are the two biggest areas of need, and we've gone offense heavy in the last two drafts. We really got to upgrade on. We've got Howard Jones and Jaquez Smith and Robert Ayers. They're just not going to get the job done. And I don't want to waste Gerald McCoy. He's been there for 5-6 years now, and he's not had someone next to him that can consistently get pressure on the quarterback. And there's no point investing in the back end if you're not going to get the pressure up front. You ask any quarterback, whether they would prefer to play against a shutdown corner or a top defensive end. And every time they'll say, I'd rather play against the cornerback because at least I've got time to throw and I can go to the other side of the field. So we've got to get pressure on opposing quarterbacks. Drew Brees is towards the end of his career, but still effective. And then Ryan and Newton are top-tier quarterbacks. So unless we're going to take those guys down, we're not going to get anywhere near winning the division. So that's the direction I'd go. Or I would look at Hunter Henry, who I absolutely love, is going to be more of a consistent producer at tight end than Austin Seferian Jenkins, whose specialism is in the red zone.
Brian, your team's picking a little bit late, pick 26 tonight. How are you looking forward to the rest of the draft?
Well, like everybody else, I think there's an awful lot of talent that's still sitting out there. For the Packers, late in round two, I guess, I'm hoping we can get more defensive front seven help. Last year, we went cornerback, cornerback in rounds one and two and really turned a weakness on our roster into a strength. Do we do that again this year along the D-line? I know there's an awful lot of depth at that position. I expect there will be somebody there that we can take, but... As Kenny Clark can illustrate, your guess is as good as mine as far as what Ted Thompson has in mind. But if I'm in his shoes, I'm taking somebody else in the defensive front seven to really shore up those two position groups on the inside linebacker on the defensive line.
Greg, you're picking kind of late too at 27. Your thoughts on the draft
as it play out? Throughout the rest of the draft, you know, our friend Matt Williamson says it's going to be a defensive draft for the Steelers. And more precisely, I think 20-plus of their pre-draft visits, which I think they get 30, were defensive backs. So I expect them to double dip on a corner here, and I expect them to pick up some more safety help. I wouldn't be surprised if they walk away with four defensive backs once the draft is completed.
I will say for the Patriots, who are picking 29 and 30, I do believe that they're going to move. My hope is that they're going to move up, but the problem is the guy that I would move up for is exactly the reason why I would not move up for him, and that's Miles Jack. He cannot be the first pick for the Patriots at all, and I don't think he's going to last all the way to the end of the second round. If he does, then obviously I'll be extremely excited. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I do think the Patriots are going to be movers at this point. They've got a ton of ammunition, and there's got to be somebody on their board that they've got targeted. I will say that this is a deep, everyone has said this is a deep defensive draft, so they don't necessarily need to move up to get a defensive player. I don't think defense is necessarily high on their list of needs. I've said all along they've got a linebacker need and an offensive line need. But I don't necessarily know, other than Miles Jack, there's a guy that the Patriots would move up for. Maybe Reggie Ragland. Maybe. But I don't. I think the price is going to have to work for Bill Belichick to make that move. Anybody else have some final thoughts here as we wrap up the show?
Oh, just Washington's draft going forward. I think you could probably just take Greg's response. It'll be the same for Washington, just defense, 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 and a whole wheelbarrow full of defensive backs.
I can't wait to see Cardell put on that Arizona Cardinals uniform. I think that'd be a great fit for Cardell Jones in the third round or something. And so I'll be really watching for that tonight.
All righty. You can email the show nextfanup@gmail.com. My wife did. She wrote, how is it any fun to watch hours and days of peeps being picked for teams when instead you could be watching one of my awesome Bravo reality shows with your wife? I can tell you how, my darling, but I have a feeling I'd like to stay married to you for the time being. So I'm not going to answer that question.
Just the time being, huh?
Just for the time being. She's a keeper for now. We've only been together for, 18 years, just for now. The first round is done. We have more draft coverage to come. On Sunday evening, we'll have a bigger wrap-up of the NFL draft. And then, of course, I'll be back on Thursday, and I'm assuming my Thursday regulars, Greg and Neil, will join me. Probably our Seattle superfan, Justin, will be there. And we'll have a few other surprises. Like I mentioned, I've got an idea for a guy that would be perfect to talk to you on Thursday. I got to reach out to him and make sure that I can make that happen, because I think the Laramie Tunsil story is one that we have just opened the book on Laramie Tunsil. I think there's going to be a lot more that will come out in the next week about that particular story, and I do find that story fascinating. Tweet us at NFU Podcast. Check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. By the time that the draft is over, we'll start posting our superfans' overall reactions to the entire draft. And you'll be able to check that out and disagree with them and send us emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. Leave us a review on iTunes, where you can subscribe to this show, besides getting it at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. And nominate us. We've got a couple more days left, one more day to be specific, to nominate us for a podcast award, Next Fan Up. Go to the podcastawards.com site, nominate this show. We would be very humbled, but I believe our draft coverage has been second to none over the past couple months. Guys, I couldn't be more proud of the content that we have put together over the past few months. We've had great guests. You mentioned Cardale Jones. He's a guy that Scott Wright mentioned, reminded him of Ben Roethlisberger, and believes will be the ultimate quarterback steal in this draft. So I'll be watching him. Obviously, we talked with a couple of draft prospects a couple weeks ago. Jarrell Presley is a guy that I've got my eyes set on for a deep round steal, and we talked to him a couple weeks ago, so I'll be looking forward to a couple of those picks, and I'll be looking forward to hearing from all of you out there. nextfanup@gmail.com. And as you all know, we like to end it with Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that this game is four quarters long.